If you missed the show,
check out Montreal's number one morning show on the go.
The Nikki, Sam, and Andy replay podcast.
I got a text from Sam's girlfriend, Josie. It said, did he tell you about the chicken? And I was like, oh God, what happened with the chicken?
I do all the cooking as it is, and the other day I was making chicken, and it's a lengthy process. You got to marinate, you got to preheat the oven, you got to season properly, and I slow cook everything. Right?
Okay,
you have to rotate them properly. It's honestly,
we've all cooked chicken before.
No, but this is like a 3-hour process.
Okay,
from beginning to end. Yeah, I really take my time. So I take the chicken out. It's ready, and she goes, leave it out. I'm going to have a couple pieces. No problem. I'm going to bed at this point. So I leave the chicken out in the Tupperware. All she has to do is grab a couple pieces and put it in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up the next morning. It's still on the counter. I go, babe, look, right away. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. She forgot.
Yeah, it happens. It's happened to me before, too.
You know, it's called like a counter sweep. Like before you go to sleep, you just make sure there's lights on, the TV's off. Yeah. There's no food, cooked food left on the counter. Anyways, I got really mad because it takes a lot of time. And when I meal prep, that's my meal for the next 2 days.
Okay.
So now what do I do? I was researching online because I really don't know. It's a gray area. How long do you leave food out before it spoils, before bacteria, and even if there's bacteria, how much is too much? I don't know. So I checked Google, and everywhere, unanimously, it says if it's out for more than 2 hours, throw it up.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. 2 hours. Ooh. Of course.
However,
on the flip side,
it's usually just a suggestion, right, or a guideline. I mean, worse things have happened. People leave food out all
worse
the time.
Worse things have happened than salmonella, you mean?
Yes. Potential salmonella.
It's pretty bad, though.
And I don't know if salmonella is just with raw chicken or with cooked chicken. I don't really know. So I really don't know what to do.
Don't eat the chicken. It's never worth it. It's never worth it. Like, why risk it?
I don't have time to make some more. I really don't.
We've all gone through this before, too. Like, whether it's bringing groceries home from the grocery store
right.
and accidentally leaving something uncooked out or whatever.
Right.
But I just would never, why would you ever risk that? Like, if you're willing to be sick for maybe weeks at a time. I had a friend who just ate a piece of cold chicken out of the fridge. It was refrigerated and she ended up in the hospital because her body couldn't get rid of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just don't know why. I would never risk it. Never risk it.
I, on the other hand, would absolutely risk it. I say eat the chicken. It took you 3 hours to make it, so you obviously put your heart and your soul and blood, sweat, and tears into this chicken.
I don't believe that.
Put it into the microwave. You'll kill off all the bacteria that's accumulated overnight, and you'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
They said that by reheating it, you'll kill most of the bacteria, but not the bacteria that's formed on the bacteria.
Yeah, exactly. And
which is the most harmful.
You can't just kill it off. If it was, why do we bother refrigerating anything? Why don't we just keep it out and recook it all the time? There's a reason.
Because things will dry out if you leave it out. That's why.
That is not the reason.
You know, a little bit of bacteria, you develop an immunity to it. It'll make your body stronger. It's good for you.
You're disgusting.
It'll be fine. It'll be
Sam,
okay.
I hear your whole sob story about I slaved over it. I cooked it. It took so much time, which I think you may be building up a little more than it actually was, please. But I would never risk it. And I think most people are not going to leave their meat out all night and then eat it again in the morning. I don't think
it's so tempting because you don't know what's going to happen, but you're willing to risk it.
What?
Right?
I feel like I'm on another planet right now.
I know. In the back of my mind, I should throw it up. A part of me's like, you know what? Just eat it and prove to yourself that it's not a big deal. Get over it. Get over the myth that it's only 2 hours and
right.
you will be.
Next says, Sam, throw it out. Go buy another one and make it again. It's only chicken. That's how I'm feeling, too.
On the flip side, this text says from Rola, eat the chicken. We always forget stuff on the counter and eat it the next day and for many days after that, and we're still here. First world problems.
But what if I said, I like running in traffic and I haven't died, so you should probably go do the same? That sounds silly, right? It sounds silly.
Yeah, it does.
All right, Sonia, what do you think?
My husband leaves stuff out all the time. Do the smell test
next
morning, and it's good.
The smell test?
But you can't do the smell test when it's already cooked, right? It has to be raw.
Well, the season should cover it. It's fine.
It's not an old pair of jeans. A smell test, it doesn't apply to food, does it?
Do you want him to die?
he'll be fine, trust me.
Oh, God.
Your husband is okay? No big health scares as of yet?
No, go with your gut feeling. But I found it so hilarious because I have this argument all the time with him, and he's just like, it'll be fine. And I'm freaking out and throwing stuff. stuff out. But
the idea of the gut feeling is going to mean a completely different thing if he eats chicken that has gone bad. I'm telling you. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good day.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. So someone said eat it for experimental purposes. Let's see what happens. That's Aphrodite. She says, I dare you.
Oh, my God.
All right. So did you put it in the fridge after it was left out for 6 hours?
Of course. Okay. The first thing I did.
Good.
Yeah.
You want to refrigerate that bacteria. Mm-hmm. So, Sam, what is the decision? Are you going to eat the chicken or not?
I'm going to eat it.
You're going to eat it?
I'm going to eat it.
All right.
And you'll be better for it.
Sam, and if I don't show up tomorrow, you know why.
Did you want me to sing at your funeral or
yes,
like a song?
Please.
Okay, good.
Can I make requests now?
Do the chicken dance.
Oh, hopefully Sam will be here tomorrow morning. We'll see.
Montreal's most listened to morning show on the go.
The Nikki, Sam, and Andy Replay Podcast.
So apparently way more millennials in North America are getting prenuptial agreements. And it's because people are pursuing the prenups and they're recognizing that some marriages don't last forever. So sort of their idea surrounding relationships have changed, you know? They said they're also more likely to inherit intragenerational wealth than previous generations. So yeah. A lot of millennials, not a lot, but many millennials know there's a lot of money coming toward them, and that wasn't necessarily happening back in the day. But mostly it's because the way people approach relationships is shifting, and they want to protect their assets because they're well aware that the divorce rates are very high now.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know much about prenups when I got married. I did bring it up to my now wife, Kelly, and she wasn't really for them for her own personal reasons. And I was comfortable with that. I mean, I was fine with it. Like I said, I didn't know much about them. I wasn't going to force the issue. I think it's something that, both parties need to feel comfortable with. If one party isn't comfortable with it for whatever reason, then I think if you force somebody to sign one, then I think you're starting the relationship off on a bad foot. And I know you're risking things. I get that. But as long as I don't step out on Kelly and cheat, I'm not overly concerned. That's me and how we feel personally about them.
But you can't expect like that both people are going to agree. Like you have to give and take in these situations. Generally, I mean, if both people are like stinking rich and understand that they want to protect their money, then sure, they'd both go in and say, yeah, let me sign this. You keep yours, I'll keep mine. Mm-hmm. Should anything change? But nothing will change because we're in love and we'll be together forever. But generally, that's not the case. There's one person who is feeling forced to do it, maybe by their families or maybe on their own account. So I don't think it's like a simple conversation. You want to, for the most part, for most people, do you want to? No. Okay, we're good. Like there's normally more to it than that, I find.
Weren't you curious to know why your fiance didn't want to sign a prenup at the time?
Yeah, and we talked about it, and we did talk about it, and like I'm not going to get into our personal reasons or anything like that, but
at least you knew like where she stood, and
yeah, I knew she wasn't comfortable with it, and for me it was really important for my wife to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. I wanted our relationship to start off on a comfortable footing, and if it didn't, then I just didn't feel comfortable personally if she's not comfortable.
I get what I mean? But if you're Channing Tatum or you're somebody who like has to protect themselves,
which I am not,
which you are not, but if you're somebody who has to protect themselves because you question sometimes why people are getting into your life. Like, I don't know where you lived when you met Kelly, but you weren't living in a mansion, were you?
No, I certainly wasn't.
So if you had millions and millions of dollars and all of these girls were showing up being like, oh, I want to marry you, maybe you'd feel a little different about it because you'd say, why you'd question people's intentions.
Yeah, certainly I would, but I wasn't Channing Tatum. I didn't and never will have millions and millions of dollars. So that's, you know, I can only take it from my own personal, you know, history and my own personal experience with it.
But you can see in that situation where one person has a lot of money how both people aren't going to easily agree on it
100%.
Necessarily.
Yeah. And I mean, these are some of the tough questions you have to address before getting married. I mean, sometimes making the comfortable decision isn't necessarily the one that's going to pan out the best in the future. I mean, Josie and I have talked about if we ever get married that we would sign it. That you know, what hers is hers, what's mine is mine. And I mean, unfortunately, you have to sort of separate the love from the material objects. You know, we don't know what kind of inheritances we're going to be getting, and we don't know how things are going to turn out. So, you know, no hard feelings.
The problem with what hers is hers and yours is yours is, sure, it is that way leading into the relationship. You guys don't have kids right now.
Right.
It makes sense. You both have jobs. You're both working.
Right.
But, like, fast forward, you sign the prenup. She stays at home. You guys agree she's going to stay at home and raise your four children, your four beautiful babies.
Start with one.
And she gives up her career.
Yeah.
Fast forward another 15 years. Maybe she gets cheated on. Maybe something happens. And suddenly she's left with nothing. Like, that seems pretty unfair, right?
I guess it can go either way. I mean, but you can only make the right decision at the time based on what you have. And I mean, look, we're not talking about millions of dollars. It's just more of a protecting against ourselves. And we hope that we have the common sense and the decency should anything fall apart, that we would look after each other. We're not just going to leave each other high and dry.
We're adults about it. Yeah.
Because everybody's so decent when marriages fall apart, right?
The claws come out. I get that. But, you know,
I think that people's argument for the most part, nobody's really mentioned it yet this morning, is just that marriages are supposed to be forever. So aren't you saying, like, if you're signing a prenup, aren't you saying right away, okay, there's a chance this won't work out?
We got a text saying that, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a good point.
This text says, my husband and I will be buying a house shortly, and we're using my inheritance as a down payment. You can bet that this is going to be outlined in the notary papers should anything happen in the future, which, of course, it won't. You know, prenups, it's something I'm so split on. I understand the argument that if you're in love, then you shouldn't need to, if you're getting married saying this is forever, and you both believe it is forever, and you're planning on doing it for the rest of your lives, then there shouldn't be any need to do it. At the same time, if that is the case, maybe why not sign it then? You know, it goes both ways.
Yeah, I kind of, and I get how people say, you know, if you want to sign a prenup, or if you're trying to get somebody to sign a prenup, then you're already saying the marriage is going to fail. You're already planning for the worst. And I get that too. That's how kind of Kelly and I felt. We felt that way too. It's like, why are we signing this? We're already admitting defeat.
I guess so. Jill, you're an attorney, and you said prenups don't really actually mean that much in Quebec.
You have two marital regimes you can choose from, and you have to go to a notary to get the second one. So people who just get married, they fall in the first regime, which everything is split 50-50. You can do a separation of assets, but everything that's family patrimony stays shared. You can't split it.
It stays shared. What do you mean?
The house, the cars, your pension, all of that is split no matter what, even if you have a prenup document.
Okay, what about your family? If you come from, like, family money and you have...
Inheritances.
Yeah.
Inheritance can be excluded.
All right.
That's interesting.
But the house, anything that's common for living together, artwork, if you have boats, if you have cars, all of that is in the family patrimony, and no matter what, it's split.
So as an attorney, you obviously wouldn't go ahead and sign a prenup because you're saying they're pretty much worthless.
They're worthless. So what you have to do is go to a notary before you get married and opt for the separation of assets regime. And that will exclude, like, inheritance and everything else. But the house, the cars, your pension, all that is split no matter what in Quebec.
Gotcha. Thank you
That's why a lot of people don't get married here.
Right.
I'm really glad you mentioned that because I was about to buy a yacht. So just to know where it's going to end up, right?
It was a paddle boat.
Well, give me a call after then. I'll help you out.
There you go.
He was about to buy a yacht and keep it in his 3.5 in TMR.
Nice.
Thanks, Jill.
Okay, bye, guys.
And when you meet your man of your dreams, Nikki, within the year, will you be asking for a prenup?
Let me meet him first, okay? Let me meet him.
First things first. You've got to think of these things now, though.
First things first, Sam. Not there yet.
Everything you missed from Montreal's favorite morning show.
The Nikki, Sam, and Andy Replay Podcast.
Okay, so it's trending online right now. What's the movie that is a lock to have you in tears? And you can text us this morning at 92925. As I was, like, sort of reminiscing and trying to remember some of these movies, for me, I literally have been welling up in tears.
like there's certain scenes that you just think about that just gets you every single time.
Yeah. And I've gotten better with my cries, but I used to, like, flat out ugly cry at movies. Like, I'd be
like, the big breath in.
Yes, all the time. So 92925, Andy, what movie does it for you?
You know what? I narrowed it down to four, but I noticed there was a theme for every single one of them.
Okay.
Marley and Me, just the worst.
It's pets, right?
Dumbo, A Dog's Purpose, and Bambi. Mm. All with animals. Apparently, that's the only thing that gets me.
You know, Lion King, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's true.
When Simba's begging his father not to leave him.
Stop it.
I don't know, for me, it's more like a Rudy. You know, like I like Rudy. A good underdog story when you see the potential of the power of the human spirit. Indomitable.
Yeah. people have some really funny ones it's trending on Twitter right now. This one says E.T. And you think E.T. isn't like the saddest movie. But they said the part where he says, I'll be right here, and points at Elliot's heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you know, that'll get you. Kim Kieran, what movie has you in tears every time?
The movie Up.
Oh, yeah.
From beginning to end, that movie has me like...
Yeah. Okay, what about, and I don't think there's anybody here who's going to disagree, that moment when in Forrest Gump, when Forrest stands at Jenny's grave and says, if there's anything you need, I won't be far away. Look, Kim's crying
don't
in there.
Don't even.
She's crying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's in carrots.
All right, there was one movie when I was younger that I used to watch over and over and over again. I think I used it as therapy or something. It was cathartic. And I would watch it, and again, I would ugly cry. I've probably seen it at least 25 times. It's mm-hmm. My Girl. Movie. Like, that should be illegal to make movies that sad.
Bees. The bees.
I know, that little boy. We're getting so many texts at 92925.
Yeah, I mean, The Notebook, Fox and the Hound, A Dog's Purpose. We just got that text. Terms of Endearment. Sam, you mentioned Terms of Endearment, didn't
did
you?
I?
Oh, no, you said Walk to Remember. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Walk to Remember.
Oh, Walk to Remember was horrible, too.
Mandy Moore.
Yeah,
right?
Ugly cried in the theater, mm-hmm. for sure. Stepmom, someone says. That one will do
oh,
it,
Susan
too.
Oh, Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. This guy goes, Homeward Bound, and I'm a 40-year-old man.
So how about Armageddon?
Oh, yeah. Ben Affleck, his greatest work.
The animal cracker scene.
Yeah. Because I'd miss you, babe, and I don't want to miss it.
And
suddenly,
who,
I really want to watch a sad movie today.
Who knew that Bruce Willis could make anybody cry?
True. True.
There's a lot of sad movies out there.
Jen, a lot of people are saying Beaches, and I've never seen the movie Beaches, so you have to sort of break it down for us.
Okay, well, it's a must-see movie, honestly. But it's about, like, these two girls, they meet, like, when they're about 10 or 11, and then, like, I think one lives on the West Coast, one lives on the East Coast, and they write letters to each other, like, you know, but they keep in touch, you know, throughout their lives, and, yeah, it's just, the ending's very sad, though.
Is that the movie with Bette Midler and she sings You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings? Is that that? Is that the song from that movie?
Yeah, that's the one. And when she sings at the end, the wind beneath my wings, I tear up every time.
Oh, yes. All right, so I want to watch this, but I just want to watch it like on a good day, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jen. Have a good one. Okay, I think The Notebook is pretty close to the top. A lot of people are saying The Notebook will do it. All right. Blindside, that'll get you.
Yeah.
Oh,
every time
Sandra
too.
Bullock. Yeah, she's awesome.
And let's not forget, we're getting a few texts for Avengers Endgame.
Oh, okay.
No spoilers, but it does have some sad moments.
See, tugs at the heartstrings.
But one of the saddest movies of all time. Really?
The Nikki, Sam, and Andy Replay Podcast.
Online at thebeat925.ca.
Or subscribe on iTunes and Google Play.
And live weekday mornings starting at 5:30.
Montreal's perfect mix. The Beat 925.